Spirit Guide Underground, February 2, 2008.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. Check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads at www.spiritblade.net. All right, the main feature today is going to be a little bit more comic book focused, although it's a little bit of potpourri of TV stuff as well. But hopefully you will enjoy that. And then we're also going to take a look at, Acts chapter 10 this week. So stick around. We got a lot that's happening. First, let's look at our updates.
Update information.
Okay. The main update this week, the free download section at www.spiritblade.net has a new addition. It's the part 5 of the commentary that I've been working on for Spirit Blade. So I'm not sure if we've hit the halfway mark yet or not. I don't think we're quite there, but if you haven't been checking out the commentary and you like that kind of stuff, if you like to listen to directors, creators, cast member type commentaries on DVDs, which I really dig, then hopefully you'll go and check those out. Most of the time I'm talking about kind of behind-the-scenes technical issues or just stupid stuff that happened behind the scenes. Part 5 particularly does have some of that stuff, but it also deals with some of the philosophy that I believe in that I wanted to present in Spirit Blade. So if any of that catches your interest, go over to the media section of www.spiritblade.net and you'll find that available to download. Let's see, what else? Oh yeah, this week I had Randy Hessen come in. I think I might have mentioned last week on the podcast. I'm not sure. Maybe it was on the blog. I can't remember. But I discovered that some of the lines that he recorded for Vincent, just like 4 of them, were messed up. They recorded badly or something, and it was an error that I couldn't detect while we were actually recording it. So I was able to finally get him in after probably only took about a week to get it scheduled so that he could come over for, you know, about 20 minutes and re-record 4 lines, plus one more just for fun. And so now I'm able to be back on track with scenes. I could have kept going on scenes, I guess, but it seemed like a nice excuse to take a break and exercise a different artistic muscle and work on music. Speaking of which, this week, before I got back in on scenes, I pretty much finished up the work on Mike Tully, one of Rand's songs for Dark Ritual, and so that felt very, very good, and it was nice, as I said, to exercise a different muscle. So that's what's been going on with Spirit Blade Productions this week. Let's jump into our main feature.
Primary feature.
Comic book information.
Activated.
All right, first off, Relativism strikes another blow to pop culture in Countdown to Mystery. That's a miniseries being presented by DC Comics and features Dr. Fate and the Spectre. I've been really enjoying the stories in there. However, some stuff came up with the Spectre that's kind of like, that's a bummer. You know, I love the Spectre. He's one of my favorite character concepts. The concept is the wrath of God bonded to a human soul. John Ostrander's run with Tom Mandrake doing artwork was a critical success. But since they stepped down, the character's gone downhill. First with the J.M. DeMatteis, or however you pronounce his name, kind of Spectre the Friendly Ghost series. I mean, it wasn't called that, but it should have been, because the character suddenly became the Spirit of Redemption. I kid you not, they changed it from the Spirit of Vengeance or the Spirit of Wrath to the Spirit of Redemption, and he was going on all sorts of touchy-feely journeys with people who, you know, really aren't so bad after all. Oh, this vampire just needed a hug, you know? I mean, it was terrible. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all about redemption. I know my own heart, and I am certainly certainly deserving of some wrath. And I think that there are some people in this world who are completely given over to evil and they will never seek redemption. So I'm not talking about telling stories about people who have done wrong and want to redeem themselves. I think that's where we all end up, you know, is that we seek redemption and that we find it in Christ. But history has shown us, I think, that there are people that will never seek redemption. They're just not, to their dying breath, they will curse the world and God and everyone in it, and they, you know, they've just given themselves over to evil and they will never seek redemption. Those are the kind of people that I would like, the people that have really done harm. I'd like to see stories about justice. You know, I'd like to see stories about wrath, that there is such a thing as good and evil, right and wrong, and ultimate cosmic justice, you know. Now, granted, we don't want to be judgmental, pretend that we know who those people are, but like I said, history has demonstrated that plenty of people go to their graves cursing everyone around them and having no remorse for the horrific evils that they've committed. They may not be in the majority, but these people certainly have existed and do exist. And what's more, if you're writing a work of fiction, then you objectively know what your character's, let's call it, spiritual condition is. So the Spectre comic is the perfect opportunity to write stories that remind us that there really is such a thing as evil and there really is such a thing as justice. There was a time when just about any superhero book could be looked at for clear examples of good, evil, and justice. But as American pop spirituality, as I call it, infects entertainment media, we run increasingly short on stories that handle these ethical realities with clear definition or any kind of distinction. In Countdown to Mystery, let's see here. This is the example that kind of said, oh boy, where is this going? It's showcasing a Spectre story, and in it we see a cruel, remorseless murderer kill someone in cold blood with a smirk on his face. The Spectre shows up and deals out vengeance. He kills the murderer. Instead of going to hell or facing any real form of punishment other than the brief discomfort of death, this guy just kind of hangs around. Why? Because he says he's an atheist, and so he has, quote, nowhere to go. Okay, fine. But the grounding of the Spectre as a character is based on the absolute monotheistic concepts of the Bible, or at least the Old Testament. The Spectre is supposed to be unstoppable. But now, some sick jerk who has no value for human life can look at the Spectre and essentially pout, I don't believe in you, go away, and like he's off the hook? This seems ridiculous to me. I mean, why even bother writing stories about the Spectre if it's that easy to avoid the justice that he brings? Anyway, I'm a DC fan, I'm a Spectre fan, and so far the rest of the story, despite my little rant here, the story and art are compelling, and compelling enough for me to continue reading. However, I can't avoid a sigh every now and then as I think about this. Now, the story isn't done, so I don't know if this killer is eventually going to see some kind of greater sense of justice. I hope that's eventually where they leave it, but right now he's just kind of hopping along and hanging around with the Spectre on whatever the Spectre's doing. So, you know, I reserve ultimate judgment for the story's end, but right now I'm kind of like, oh boy, where is this going? All right, so some interesting tidbits over at LatinoReview.com. There's a reviewer named El Maimbe, and he did have a review posted for the G.I. Joe script that they have for the movie that's being produced, but it was taken down in cooperation with Paramount. He did say, though, that all you need to know is that the third script, the G.I. Joe script by Stuart Beatty that Paramount is going to make, is a love letter to G.I. Joe fans and a masterpiece. Fans around the world will be overjoyed when the mythical characters of Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow, Duke, and Scarlet, to name a few, roar to life on the movie screen in 2009. So at least from one person's perspective, the script is really lends itself to fans of the franchise, fans of maybe the original cartoon series. So that should be interesting to see. I also heard that, is it Ray Park or Ray Parks? I can't remember. But the guy that did Darth Maul and also Toad in X-Men, and then of course Star Wars Episode One, he's playing Snake Eyes. So that's kind of an interesting move. I also think it's kind of interesting because doesn't Snake Eyes, like, he doesn't talk, right? He's a mute, is that right? And, you know, I think Ray Park isn't that fantastic of an actor, and he tends to do roles, you know, these action roles that don't talk. So it seemed like a good choice. I don't know if they'll show his face or not, but anyway. Peter Segal, this is from DarkHorizons.com. He's the director of the upcoming feature film Get Smart, based on the classic sitcom series. And he says, he tells IGN Movies that he plans to stay very faithful to the source material of Shazam. He is working on a Shazam movie. That's DC's Captain Marvel character. The comic book has to go by Shazam because of some legal stuff with Marvel Comics. But anyway, yeah, basically a Captain Marvel movie. He says, Segal says, I think in even some of the best dramas, there's always a sense of humor that you can bring to it. It is a 13-year-old boy who becomes a superhero, and I think there is an element of big in that, and I think there always was in the comic book. And I think when he says big, he's probably referring to the Tom Hanks movie about the kid that magically becomes an adult for a while. So, yeah, I imagine there'll be some humor in there. But I was relieved also to hear this bit. Segal says that the film is going to have a very serious tone with moments of humor, and I think it'll be somewhere between Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. That sounds about right. I'm glad it's going to be between Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. I thought Fantastic Four, particularly the second one, was way too light, way too jokey, way too, I don't know, it just wasn't, there was no intensity, or I was never afraid for any of the characters. Didn't care about them a whole lot either, except for maybe the Thing in the first one. But anyway, I'm getting off the point. There's also rumor slash talk that Dwayne The Rock Johnson would play the villainous Black Adam, and Segal says that he's been looking for something to do with something else, because I guess they've maybe done a movie already together, I don't know, but something else to do with Dwayne Johnson, and he doesn't have a draft to show him yet, but he was telling him the story and thought that he would be a great Black Adam. And yeah, I can kind of see that, especially with Black Adam kind of bulking up visually his look a little bit in the comics in the last few years. I think he'd be he could be a really good fit for that. Okay, so just a little rundown on TV shows and how they're affected by the strike, the kind of cool sci-fi geeky shows that we would enjoy. What can you expect this season? This information I got from Wizard, this month's issue of Wizard. Lost is going to have 8 episodes this season. Battlestar Galactica is going to have 13 out of 22, and there's a rumor a while back that if the writer's strike prevented them from finishing all the episodes, that the series as a whole would end unfinished. But Wizard seems to have hope that this will actually just result in kind of an extension of the series' farewell. Oh my gosh, after such a great series, I can't imagine they would allow it to be finished incomplete. So hopefully, you know, yikes. Anyway, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I've been enjoying, has 9 episodes this season. We've already seen, what, 2 or 3 already? Jericho, a show I'm not familiar with, but basically about post-apocalyptic survival, has 7 episodes this season, and I think that's all that they were planning anyway. One of the few that's not falling short. The other one that's not falling short is Torchwood, a spinoff of Doctor Who produced by the BBC, and all 13 episodes of that will be produced because it's not an American show and it's not being affected by the writer's strike. In other little bits of TV news, David Hasselhoff is going to appear as Michael Knight in the February 17th Knight Rider pilot. There's a new Knight Rider being released, and I think the rumor I've heard is that the main guy that's riding the car around now is like Michael Knight's son or something like that. I'm not sure. So anyway, but David Hasselhoff is going to at least appear in the pilot. I don't know if he's planned to be part of a series if it gets picked up, but that ought to be interesting. And then, let's see here, some comics news, some DC Comics news that I found interesting that I also picked up from Wizard this month. Final Crisis, the big event that Countdown in DC Comics is leading to, will not be crossing over into ongoing books during its run, which I think is a welcome change, because as much as I've loved what's happening in DC Comics right now, it's costing me some money. Because a lot of these miniseries that are spinning out of it, like Countdown Arena and Countdown to Mystery and stuff like that, I've really been enjoying, and they're really good, with a couple of exceptions. I was a little disappointed in the Black Adam miniseries and how it ended. I think I'm going to sell that and actually Countdown Arena this next week. But there've been some interesting concepts and stuff like that, but I'm tired of forking out money for it. So anyway, it's good to hear that their next big event is not going to be, you know, have lots of crossovers and stuff like that. They're also starting a new weekly title, and I think this is good news. Not that they're starting a new weekly title, but what it's going to be about. This is Dan DiDio. kind of the corporate executive editor or something like that at DC. He says that the new weekly title that's starting up this summer doesn't interact with the DCU, but features all the prime DC characters, which I'm trying to figure out, okay, how does that work? I'm guessing it's a parallel Earth type thing, you know, with which is what we're dealing with right now with Final Crisis. In either case, that means I can drop it. I'm sure that's not what DC wants to hear. But I loved 52 as a weekly series. It was really well written. I've been a little bit more disappointed with Countdown, although not much. But it's enough for me to say, you know, I'm hoping they don't have another weekly after this, because after this story's done, I think I'm done. Because that as well, that's an extra $2.99 every week that I spend in comics, you know, for, do the math, for, you know, times $2.99, whatever that is, a month. I suck at math, sorry folks. So I'll be glad that the new weekly doesn't involve itself in the mainstream DC universe, because that will give me permission to drop it, because I'm really personally, as a fan, focused on the mainstream continuity of the DC universe. And lastly, just spouting off a little bit from me on Green Lantern, I think it's a great time to be a Green Lantern fan. There's a host of other Lantern Corps that are going to be showing up, like Black, Red, we've already got the yellow one with the Sinestro Corps, Blue. You know, at first, at the end of the big story arc, the Sinestro Corps War, when they showed this preview of all these future other Green or other Lantern Corps, I was like, what in the world? This feels a little bit like the crazy Kryptonite era of Superman, where there was like a bunch of different Kryptonites and it was just getting all out of hand and stuff. But I think if they introduce these things slowly enough, and if they still make sure that there's something unique and special about the Green Lantern Corps that causes them to rise above the others, then I think it could still be really cool. I'm also intrigued in the concept of these different Lantern Corps. The idea is that each Lantern Corps derives its power from a different aspect of the human character. They might say emotions, although I don't consider willpower to really be an emotion. It's just kind of, to me, in my mind, a facet of human character. But the Green Lanterns draw their power from their will. The Sinestro Corps, they draw their power by inspiring fear. And the next big story arc coming in late 2008 is called Rage of the Red Lanterns. And the Red Lanterns, from what I understand, they draw their power from hatred and anger. So that should be, I think that should be very interesting. Geoff Johns continues to show his love for reviving forgotten threads and ideas. The Blackest Night is an event prophesied way back in a GL Corps annual story from 1986, written by acclaimed author Alan Moore, and that event is looming in the future. And I think also this the Daxamite Green Lantern Sodom Yat in Green Lantern Corps is going to play into that somehow. I've got the annual on my wall. I cover my wall in comic books, and it's really high up there, and I haven't gotten it down to read it in forever, so I need to do that. But I'll have to wait till after the podcast here so I can go grab a ladder. So anyway, that's it for the main feature.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word about God stands forever.
All right, if you haven't checked it out already, go ahead and stop right now and read Acts chapter 10, because we are beginning our search for truth today there. Cornelius, he was a Gentile, a non-Jew, who had great respect for God and a desire to please him, but he didn't know some of the important details. In fact, although his intentions were good, and you might say he was sincere in his belief, he was missing enough information that he thought it might be appropriate for him to worship Peter when the apostle arrived to speak with him. And despite this, God saw Cornelius' heart and was pleased with him on some level. So at this point, we got to ask ourselves, does this support the idea that God will accept anyone, you know, as long as they are sincere in what they believe? Well, the text doesn't lend itself to that kind of conclusion, I don't think. If God were content to have this man worship in ignorance, then he would have left him alone. Instead, he sent an angel to direct him to someone that could present the truth accurately. And it wasn't until Cornelius heard the truth and believed it that his relationship with God was made right and restored. And we see that actually happening in verse 44, when the Holy Spirit, who is God himself, enters into Cornelius and those listening to Peter. Now, this story is also interesting to look at from Peter's perspective. Peter, a devout Jew, he would have had the ceremonial law, which essentially actually in many ways was designed to identify Israel as a chosen race. He would have had the ceremonial law so ingrained into his mind that he would have shuddered to think of eating the mix of clean and unclean animals mentioned in verse 12. And for more specifics on that, you can check out Leviticus 11 for info on unclean animals and what God wanted the Jews to avoid in the Old Testament ceremonial law. But Jesus had already made it clear that the ceremonial laws regarding food were being set aside. We see that in Matthew 15:11. Peter also would have been hesitant to associate with non-Jews, similar to the way that I think Christians often avoid the strange or unusual people in our culture. You know, I mean, I think as we grow up, if our parents are doing good to try and put good influences in our lives, then they kind of watch who we hang out with and stuff like that. But there comes an age, you know, where when we can think and when we can discern right from wrong on our own, the more and more we grow in that, the more and more I think we should be hanging out with people that are strange and different from us, or that are non-believers, and maybe even really opposed to Christianity. But I don't think that's an attitude that we want to carry from childhood into our young adult and adult years. That attitude of, oh my gosh, what would my Christian friends think if they saw me hanging out with them, you know? Now, like many of us, Peter had a hard time separating the tradition he grew up with from the truth. And in this case, God went so far as to give Peter a vision in order to help correct his thinking. Boy, I would like that every once in a while. And because Peter was willing to step outside of his comfort zone, God gave him the opportunity to share the truth with a group of people that, at best, had incomplete understanding of who God is, at best. And when Peter made the effort to discern the difference between the tradition he was raised with and actual truth, then God used him to bring the ultimate eternal gift to those who really wanted it. I mean, imagine if we were Christians today that really cared about constantly examining truth, tradition, culture, and discerning and dividing what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what is not helpful, you know? Wow, I think that we would have opportunities that we never even imagined before. I think they would just suddenly start showing up. Anyway, Peter makes an important observation here. Based on what he says in verses 34 through 35, it becomes undeniable to modern readers. Take a look at those verses. I think it becomes undeniable to modern readers that the Bible is intended for everyone. You know, some people want to say, well, you know, it's a Christian religion. You know, if you were raised in America, then you're a Christian or whatever. You know, it's a Christian kind of phenomenon. Or, you know, being a Jew is, you know, a Jewish phenomenon. If you were raised, you know, in a Jewish culture, a Jewish family or whatever, you know. But it's very clear here, I think, in 34 and 35, that it's intended for everyone, every nation, every subculture, beyond heritage or tradition. God wants everyone to be set free by the truth that's presented in the Bible. No special ritual or ceremonies required. No years of self-sacrifice or giving will buy heaven for anyone. I mean, remember here, Cornelius had been giving financially to the Jews already. See that in verse 2. But God still wanted him to believe specifically in Jesus. So sincerity and generosity, God was not content for Cornelius to just stop there. He wanted him to know and accept the truth. He wanted him to specifically believe in Jesus. Genuine belief in Jesus is the trigger here. After hearing and accepting what Peter said in verses 34 through 43, which is great just to read and be reminded of the truth and get excited about the core of the Bible, the core of who Jesus is and what he, not of who he is, but of his mission. And those listening instantly gained eternal life and a real connection to God upon hearing that and accepting that. That's exciting stuff. So again, if you're not following along with these in reading the chapters, I highly recommend that you do. Otherwise, obviously, what I'm saying is probably not going to make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, it may not anyway, even if you read it. So the most valuable thing that you could read and pay attention to is not listening to me blab, but checking out the Word of God. That's an awesome resource that he's just given to us. So next week, we're going to look at Acts chapter 11. In a few more weeks, just to kind of give you a heads up, I think it's after Acts 14, we are going to start looking at Galatians, because I'm interested in kind of taking a chronological look, going through Acts. And I don't know if I'll do this with all of Acts, because eventually that'll take us through the whole New Testament. And, you know, some people may really want to finish Acts, you know, going straight through. So if you're one of those people, let me know, put your vote in, and I'll reconsider what we're going to do after Galatians. But after Acts 14, we are going to stop and then go through the book of Galatians, because that's where, in the chronological events presented in Acts, that's where people believe that Paul, between Acts 14 and 15, that's where he wrote the book of Galatians. And since we're kind of keeping an eye on Paul and his growth and his change and stuff like that, I thought it would be interesting to kind of look at his writing too as we chart along with his life. So, but next week in Acts chapter 11, we're going to see that change is in fact good. Not always, but it sure can be, and we see an example of that next week. The coffeehouse question this week is, what can you think of about biblical Christianity that makes it unique from any other religion or spiritual path? C.S. Lewis said something very interesting about this, about what makes Christianity unique. I won't give it away. If somebody remembers to ask me, then I will try to remember to say it on next week's show. But what can you think about biblical Christianity? I'm not talking about cultural Christianity. I'm talking about biblical Christianity as it's presented in the Bible. That's why I say biblical. So what can you think of about biblical Christianity that makes it unique from any other religion or spiritual path in all of history? Think about that and give me your thoughts, and I would love to share them on the air. All right, that's it for today's show. Some people really are looking forward to the Super Bowl tomorrow. I'm kind of, whatever. I'll play some video games in the afternoon. Somebody asked me yesterday what team I was hoping would win, and I said, well, who are the mascots? And they said the Giants and the Patriots. And I said, well, seems to me the Giants ought to win because, you know, a Patriot, that's someone that really loves their country, but a Giant, that's a freaking giant person with probably a huge club with nails coming out of it. I don't think the Patriot is going to stand much chance against a Giant. So it seems to me that if they want to play a realistic game, then the Giants are going to win. Otherwise, it's, you know, the illusion's kind of going to be disrupted for me. But in any case, I'm not going to be watching the game. I'm going to record the game. And then later on when I get around to it, I will fast forward through the game and watch the commercials, probably at the end of my evening after a fun afternoon of video gaming. So whatever you're doing, I hope you enjoy your Super Bowl afternoon tomorrow. It's actually, you know, the Super Bowl is actually here in Phoenix. You'd think I'd be more excited about it, but even here, maybe that's even more reason to just stay home and avoid the crazy traffic and what all, you know. So anyway... I got nothing, folks. Have a great week, and until next time, seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Great Santa is awesome. Plato is a crazy freak.